Once again, welcome to episode number 75 of the Weekly Harvest Podcast. My name is Chris Falcavage. You can call me Falco, Director of Game Day Operations, Community Relations with the Brandon Wheat Kings, in-arena voice of the team. This is Rob Mann, radio voice of the team. Rob, how are you today?
Doing pretty well, thanks, Chris. Doing pretty well.
This is a little weird, not just because the year is over, but because we're sitting side by side.
Yeah, this whole season I've been like reflexively turning that way to look at you. So if you see me like twitch in this direction whenever Chris asks a question, you know why. Usually he sits across there and manages the computer and our guest sits up on my right. But today it's just you and I because, well, we've got a season to recap.
You know, if you are watching, thank you. If you're just listening, thank you as well. 75 episodes deep. We wish that we were talking about, you know, moving on to round two and all the excitement, but unfortunately, Rob, the last couple of weeks for us around here, it's been a lot of that end of the year wrap up, which a lot of people ask me, and we're going to kind of we'll get into it here today, about what do you guys do now the season's over? You guys just get to take time off? The quick answer to that is no. We are still doing a whole lot of stuff when the year is over, and we will get into that today, but it definitely does come down a whole lot, right? Just in terms of the emotional roller coaster at the end of the season. This time is a time to kind of reflect a little bit, but a time to move forward as well.
It's a strange feeling walking back into the office and realizing that for the first time in months, you don't have a game day to prepare for. You know who your next opponent is going to be in theory, or at least you can reasonably guess, but you don't know when exactly it's going to be yet, and you don't know when any of the lineups are going to be yet, and everything else is just on hold for months as far as game day operations are concerned. And it's a strange feeling because the buzz of a game day, which pushes you through those days so fast and makes them fly by, is now just gone.
So before we get too far into that, let's recap. Let's go back, because the last time that we were on the pod, we were doing our playoff preview with Marty Murray talking about the series to come versus Moose Jaw, and even the way, Rob, I remember us talking about it and phrasing some of the questions, we knew going in about how dangerous that top line was, but how quickly they can make you pay on the littlest of mistakes.
Absolutely. Moose Jaw's high-end finishing was the difference in that series. If you look at it as a four-game sweep, it's tempting to dismiss it as a lopsided series. None of the games really were. There weren't any real blowouts. That last game gets colored a little bit by some empty netters. But at the end of the day, that's mostly close games. The difference is Moose Jaw is going to finish on a higher percentage of their chances than Brandon is, because you've got that leading scorer in Furkus. You've got that two-point-a-game guy in Savoy. You've got Braden Yeager. We counted it up, and we were talking with Marty before the series about how they had four World Junior players on that team. We should have been more specific. They had four for Canada. They had four in Savoy, Furkus, Yeager, and Matejchuk. They had two others in Port and Rysavy, who had represented Czechia at the events. So they had six World Junior caliber players on that team. They were loaded.
It's one of those things where, you know, you need the players to have this as a learning experience. You get into playoffs that you can learn for next year. And a part of that is learning that you need to be able to play a full 60 minutes. How many games in this series? It was pretty much every game. And even going back to our games versus Moose Jaw in the regular season, it was saying, well, if it only weren't for that little spurt in the first where we gave up two or three, if it wasn't only for that little spurt, then and you really can't do that in playoffs. You can't give up that little spurt, and that's unfortunately what happened. It happened in the first, and the guys play catch-up. They did make it close, but it was those just little lapses where it kind of cost them, but that's the learning structure that they need to know to succeed for the future.
Moose Jaw scored multiple times in the first period of every game in this series. None more dramatically than Game 4, unfortunately. But even Game 2, the closest game of the series, was tied at 2 after 20 minutes. And that was the game, in hindsight, where I think a lot of the spirit of the Wheat Kings kind of fell off a bit. That was a game where they left everything on the ice. They let it all on the line. It just wasn't quite enough. It's an overtime loss to a very good team, which in the regular season, you take the positives from, you take the point from, and you move on. In the playoffs, going home down 2-0, when you had that split right there within your grasp, that's crushing. And I think that was a game that demoralized the team more than maybe we gave it credit for at the time.
There are a lot of positives to take out of that short run, though. One of which is the return of Roger McQueen and the absolute instant impact that he had returning to the lineup. Roger, on a lot of radars coming up in the next season.
He would be the biggest positive, for sure. I mean, he led the series in goals for the Wheat Kings, and he was the only Wheat King up until Game 4, at least, where he had his streak snapped to score in every game. He finished with 4 goals in 4 games, which is pretty impressive against Moose Jaw. And he's still not satisfied. That's the nice thing about when I talked with Marty a little bit about what they were expecting going forward from Roger, because, of course, he was such a big fixture that playoff series. He said that Roger was still looking for more. He wants to see more from himself next year. And when I consider that Roger's gotten taller but hasn't really filled out yet, I believe that's well within his power to achieve. The skill is there, the smarts are there, that enviable physical frame over which to project is there. And he's been playing at, 6'6" and 190-ish pounds. If he can get to 200+, he'll be an absolute force next season.
End of the season always brings a whole lot of emotion. One of the hardest things in junior hockey, it's the last game of the year, and then any time that a player has to be traded, because it's the goodbyes. It's not just the goodbyes, to their teammates, but it's the goodbye to the Bill families, to the community that some of these guys have lived a number of years in. And one of the hardest things it is that, especially after the end of the game, seeing the faces of, I think right away, Brett Hyland, Jaden Weens, Jackson D'Souza, feel really, emotional for those guys that it's coming to an end. I know that all three of those, though, guys, I know Robbie want to talk about, but they all made very tremendous impacts in their time here.
Oh, absolutely. And I was saying to Pete Gerlinger on the broadcast that it felt like they'd all been here forever, even though two of them joined the team either right before the season or during it. It was Jackson D'Souza and Jaden Weens' first years as Wheat Kings, and yet they fit in so seamlessly. And their personalities infected that dressing room so positively that it felt like they'd been here forever. It felt like they had always been Wheat Kings. And Brett Hyland, of course, who his entire career was a Wheat King, was the third member of that 20-year-old group. That is such a good group of personalities to have leading the way, and they are going to be missed here.
Instant impacts, for sure. And, I mean, it was an absolute blast to have them. How many times over the years that we've gotten 20-year-olds that I know we've said, why could we have not got these guys a year earlier? Why not 2 years? If they could have been 2-3 year Wheat Kings, much more of the fan base would have seen what, our fan base this year did see in those guys. But it was tremendous. Wish nothing but the best for those guys. Of course, in terms of junior hockey, the team is always evolving. That's just the nature of it. So now you look at the 19-year-olds who are going to be becoming the potential 20-year-olds. And of course, in our roster, we'll do a much further breakdown later in the summer when we get into that with Chris Moulton and stuff. But for our team, there aren't going to be a whole lot of spots open next year for the young guys that we're going to be talking about to be coming in, because a lot of our guys are eligible. There's only a few 19s are going to be taking up the potential 20-year-old spots.
So mathematically, if you want to know how many players a team is going to have to lose from any given roster, you just look at the number of 19-year-olds they have, because they're going to be able to keep 3 of those guys, and 3 20-year-olds are going to move on, so those numbers kind of balance out. So the number of 19-year-olds a team has, that's how many guys they are losing. For the Wheat Kings, it's going to be 5. You've got 5 players born in 2004. You can keep 3 of them, so that's 2 guys left, and then you've lost your 3 20-year-olds. You're losing 5 guys. That's 5 open roster spots, assuming everybody returns. And I got to say, I think some of those roster spots are fairly well spoken for. You look at the guys coming up the pipeline who've made such big contributions this year and shown so promisingly, I'm going to say at least one of those forward spots is firmly claimed, and I would argue that there's a spot on defense that has somebody's name on it as well.
There very well could be a couple that have already, after the seasons that were had, and we're talking, and we'll just start naming some guys here, but we saw the debut of Emerson Clark this season, had a great year with the Saskatoon Blazers, making it all the way to the final of the TELUS Western Regionals against that stacked Brandon Wheat Kings club that has 4 Brandon Wheat King prospects on it, 3 of which are signed, 1 of which you're talking about probably has a roster spot next year, potentially 2 of them, I would think, maybe even all 3.
I was going to say, at the start of the year, don't be shocked at all if all 3 of those guys start the year here.
Absolutely, when guys are gone to camp and things, for sure, but the future is very bright, and then you look at the other first round pick that we just got to see come in at the end of the season, which was Gio, Georges Pantelis. He was here, he got in some action, and it was great to see him around. He had a great career, a great career, but a great year out there at U18.
And he was good in the game he was called up for. The last game of the season he played against the Regina Pats, and that's a game that was the home closer for Regina. It was the final turn on home ice for three of their 20-year-olds. So it was a meaningful game for Regina, even though as far as the playoffs were concerned, games had ceased to have that meaning for them really at some point during the U.S. trip. But they were still in go mode. They wanted to send the fans off on a high note. And for Gio to step into that environment and to play as well as he did, because I thought he was effective that game. He had three shots on goal. He didn't make any really horrible errors, and I don't believe he was on the ice for any goals against. So he had a pretty solid outing against Regina with some decent ice time, and I think there's a preview there of what he can be. I will say physically, that's a young man who doesn't have to develop too much. He's already 6'2", probably about 190 pounds. If he gets taller in the summer, which is never to be ruled out at that age, a guy coming in at 6'3" and around the 200-pound mark, he's physically ready already for the WHL.
One thing this spring is we're not going to get a chance to see a lot of the prospects. We're not going to be doing the full-out prospect camp like traditionally was done. So we'll get to see them. You know, the coaches have their own things going on. They're going to be doing their stuff coming up more in the fall. But I know talking to those guys as they were leaving, all of our young guys, but especially the young ones who I was talking to about specifically, like, oh, well, what's next? It is training. Like, some of these guys used to take some time off and be like, all right, you know, I got this trip. And some guys do have some fun trips and whatnot, of course. But I was surprised by the amount of players leaving that were being like, no, I got this. Like, their holiday is they got time booked with special trainers at different blocks throughout the summer.
And I found that because, you know, I work out a bit with Tyler Sanjanko, who is the strength and conditioning coach for the Wheat Kings. He and I have been working on some stuff. And a lot of times when I leave a session with him, he goes right into a session with one of these Brandon guys. And I'll tell you from firsthand experience, he doesn't take it easy on them. So these are guys who are the hometown guys in particular are going to be training around Brandon all offseason long. And you can bet that that's going to be mirrored. There's going to be some guys who have big summers. I'm curious to see what kind of summer some of these guys have. So we talked about for a guy like Roger McQueen, who might want to put on 5 or 10 pounds of muscle. He's got the summer to do that. For some of these younger kids, they'll be looking to do the same thing without sacrificing speed. That's the real balancing act you have to bring in there. I'm curious to see who has the biggest summer, because there's a lot of guys that I know from speaking with the Wheat Kings training staff are very driven off the ice.
There are a couple of guys who have got some other summer plans that will be back on the ice. No official announcements yet, but we're assuming that there's going to be at least a couple of Wheat Kings, probably named to Team Canada's U18 team. On top of that, I know there's other prospect hockey that we're going to get into in a little bit when we talk about the National, the TELUS Cup, and the U18 Wheat Kings. There's going to be a lot of training both on and off the ice and a lot of experience before the guys get back into the black and gold here in September.
And the World Under-18s and the TELUS Cup are actually going to be going on at right about the same time. They kind of intersect with each other. So April's a very busy month for Hockey Canada. We've got a lot of tournaments on the roster in that particular month. And then, of course, you get, you know, if you're working with Hockey Canada, you get right into the Men's World Championship in May. So shout out to my predecessor, Brandon Crow, who's now with Hockey Canada and is going to be juggling an absolute mess of tournaments for the next month and a half, not counting. I didn't even bring up the Centennial Cup, the Junior A Championships. That's a Hockey Canada event, too.
And then there's the U18 women's as well, and there's an absolute ton. So they're going to be a very, very busy crew over there for sure. So coming up now here in the office, what do we do when the season's over? People are like, okay, so the year's done, the players, you know, all the tears have been shed, and it's sad, bye, but it's going to be great. Let's be hopeful for the future. And then they're gone, and it's so quiet.
Oh, goodness,
like,
yes.
It is such an absolute drop-off in this building. What happens is the year is over, and then depending on when it ends and the time of the week, almost immediately, though, there's exit interviews where the players go, and they'll meet with the coaches and then the GM, talk about the year that was, what's expected, what's going on, and their actual exit plans, right? Just a way to send the players off onto the summer break. Then the guys, usually within a few days, are all dispersed and they're away. And then the coaches go. And then all of a sudden, it is us in the office up here. And we're still here. And we got a lot of wrap-up stuff to do. But it's generally, Rob, I talk about how it's still busy, but it's quiet in this building. And I don't like it.
It's 100-0 as far as and people coming in and out of the office. I mean, during the year, you might see any number of staff members from the hockey ops side of things coming in here, having conversations. Hey, can I have a hand with yada yada, whatever it may be. The players might come up looking for something. You've got players to take on read to succeed visits and so forth. And all of that stuff just comes right to a stop. And we're left with, yes, a fair bit of work to do. But it's done in this uninterrupted, almost unearthly silence.
It is. It is. And it's almost because it's a little therapeutic in a sense. There, sometimes I feel a little cathartic doing it, where we have to basically archive our year. So we have to go through everything. We're a small staff. We try to keep up through the year, but games happen fast. And when you get multiple photographers and videographers and these highlight packs, stuff can live in different folders and all over the place. For us to bring it all together in a way that we can then use that, you know, media for the summer, that takes a little while. The physical cleanup around the rink of just all the storage rooms and the fan zone area and all that stuff that needs to be sorted and has promo items, you know, through the season.
I mean, heck, people should have seen this room before we tidied it up. I mean, it was...
This desk had stuff about piled this high if you're looking on the video, and it was like all... Anyway, it's one of those things where, you know, people, you know, to pull back that curtain, the week after, it really is like one of the biggest spring cleanings. And it's nice because now that it's done, and I feel like we're just kind of now doing the finishing pieces... And already we start to flip the page onto what we got to do for next season. And that's really now what our summer is. While the coaches, you know, it's not as if, by the way, they're just off and now they just don't do anything. We still see them around the rink all the time, of course, because they don't have to be. They can do their stuff from afar. But they're scouting, looking at videos, talking about different stuff. With us here, we got to prepare for the next season, where when you, the fans, show up for that first game, everything on the big screen that you see, everything that is on the printouts, that's all got to be sold to a sponsor. It's got to be created from a marketing team, and it's got to be produced. And to do all that, it literally takes us all summer, of course, with the staff that we have. And I know that one of my things is trying to look at that in the most fun that we can, because it can seem daunting. It really is climbing a mountain, getting ready for home opener. Because the entire show, people expect it to be fresh. They expect it to be new. There to be, you know, everything where it's not the same stuff from last season. And we do our best to do that. When there's about 140 elements on a game besides the Wild stuff that you see, 140 programmed things on your game day that we have to make and we have to create now over the summer. And one thing I was going to get into here, Rob, is try to have fun with it. And that's what I did on Friday, putting some of the serious stuff aside. I probably spent, about an hour and a half, 2 hours, not a lot, but a couple hours downloading fun videos and making some more of those ones with our logos over them for next season, because it brought people in my office and it got us laughing again.
We did have some good chuckles about that.
And it got us just, you know, talking about that of, oh man, can you imagine the crowd's reaction if we do that? And those fun ideas, that's what gets me even more excited. Is again, I know we're going to have a good team on the ice, but our team off the ice here, as we continue to grow and we do this, it seems like everybody's at least finally pushing in the right direction.
It's been a tumultuous little time because, of course, we've had so much change. You know, I came in before the season starts last year. We brought in Fair and Munn for our ticketing during the season, and now everybody's kind of settled in and, as you said, all pulling on the rope in the same direction, which is nice. You mentioned climbing a mountain. It's worth pointing out that mountain does fight back because, hey, it's the offseason. GM Marty Murray, head coach and GM Marty Murray, but I speak specifically to him as a GM right now, he's still working. He still makes trades. Trades still happen in the offseason, and that can sometimes throw a wrench into stuff we do in the office. If we've, say, for instance, had a lot of marketing centered around one particular player, we've got to now make adjustments. So there's a mountain to climb, and it's a changing mountain. And there's certain dates in the offseason that are big on our calendar. For instance, the prospects draft and the U.S. draft, which is coming up. But it's a fun kind of mountain to climb. You just wish it was maybe being done a little later on in the year, as I'm sure it will be next year.
Yeah, I could definitely deal with doing this, you know, in like May. That'd be all right. June.
But June would be great.
June in 2016, that was actually pretty quick. that was a heck of a run in 2016. That was a very quick turnaround that year, but... I would take one of those again.
I would love to see one of those for the first time. My career playoff runs have come back in my days when I was working in junior A, and at that point in time, the playoffs are done usually by the end of April. So it was a little different then.
Well, hopefully we're knocking on the desk that for next season and beyond, we can definitely get some deeper runs there. You mentioned briefly the fact that next up on the hockey schedule, it's not actually a game. It is going to be the draft. And I know that, you know, GM and the scouts, this is their time. The scouts spend all year making their lists, double checking it, you know, much like Santa, who's been naughty, who's been nice, who's going to make the top of their list. And then they get into that draft room, and it is chaos, and it is a lot of fun. And that's one of the more hopeful times, too, for a franchise where you can really think about the future, even though those guys, besides one guy taken here in this draft, those guys won't make an impact for at least one more year.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I always love the draft, whether it's the NHL draft or the Western Hockey League draft. It's one of my favorite days of the year because it's all optimism. Everything is about a bright future. If you've got any pick at all, this player might turn out to be a great player for your team. And if you have faith in your scouts, as the Wheat Kings do, you've got all that much more belief in what they're doing with the players they pick. For the Wheat Kings, they're going to be picking 14th overall. You don't have a Wheat King comparable on that front in as far back as I've been able to find here. I went back to like the early 90s and there was no 14th overall pick for the Wheat Kings. Quinn Manti was 13th overall though, and he turned out pretty well. So that's definitely an indication that the Wheat Kings are going to be able to find a good player. If I go down the list of 14th overall picks in recent memory in the WHL draft, some of the guys I come up with are Zach Benson and Ryder Ritchie. So you've got good players available at that point. There's the U.S. draft, which is evolving. More and more players from that draft are now accepting the offer to come to Canada. You're seeing more and more teams that are making good on those picks. And as you touched on, there is one guy who is going to make an immediate impact. The Wheat Kings probably aren't going to get him. I'm going to say probably. I don't want to rule.
You don't think he's going to be available at 14 is what you're saying?
Yeah. If I had
bold prediction there, Rob.
If I had a guess, I mean, I'm putting my neck out there, but that's what we do on this podcast.
Bold prediction. So, yeah, Landon Dupont granted exceptional status, only the second WHL player to ever be granted that, of course, following the steps of Connor Bedard. Everett Silvertips with the first overall pick in this draft. And it's not their pick,
yeah.
which is one of those things where you look at a team who made the playoffs as third overall, makes the second round, still playing, and now they got the first overall pick and can land a generational talent if they don't trade that pick, which I don't think they will.
No, I don't know what you could trade that pick for that you would reasonably recoup your cost on it. I mean, that's...
You could take the pick and then trade him again in 2-3 years and get just as much, if not more.
Exactly. And imagine, you know, we're on the marketing side of things. Just imagine being able to market a generational talent like that to your fan base. It would be so... And Everett, to be clear, has a pretty good job going of that already. Like, if you go to the United States, their fans are into it. But give a team in that region that kind of bargaining chip, and you're going to see a packed Angel of the Winds arena for years. Incidentally, I was looking through kind of what other teams, and we'll get to where we think the Wheat Kings will stack up, but I was looking into what kind of other teams are looking good as far as certain birth years go, the kind of teams who might be up against the Wheat Kings in a couple of years when they're really pushing and contending. Everett's going to be good with a capital G for a long time. A lot of their best players right now are 06s. They're getting good contributions, don't get me wrong, from guys like Ben Hammerling, guys who are 04s and 03s and already drafted, like Austin Roost. But like Julius Miettinen and Terrence Smith on defense, both up for the draft this year, both probably going to go. There's a lot of talent from the 06 birth year on that Everett team. They've got like 6 or 7 guys who are productive already at that age. That's shaping up to be a scary good team in a couple of years.
Definitely have made a lot of trades in the last few seasons just to stay competitive, though, and have not completely mortgaged the future. So
no, although I will say this, when you have a bargaining chip like Olin Zellweger to play with, like they did last year, you are playing with house money.
And that's how you restock your cabinets, though. I mean, we've seen that even with the trade that your own Brandon Wheat Kings made this season. When you can trade somebody and you get those first-round picks, sometimes those first-round picks can turn out to be a lot higher than initially thought. Stelio Mateos, for example.
Yeah.
It just kind of happens. So
Roger McQueen.
Yeah, the list in the Wheat King history, you know, when Perry Berkson did that article, my time runs together. I don't know if he did it this year or last year.
He did one this year for sure.
He's updated a few times, but he's still tracked those trades after the 2016 year where it was Tanner Kaspik and Cale Clegg. And all of the trades that have followed suit, it's still paying off and continues to pay off, and it's still not done.
I
so he can update that article in 2 more years, and it's still going to be going.
I love those trade tree videos that Steve Dangle used to do on the Sportsnet YouTube channel, because he's not with Sportsnet anymore. I don't know if he's going to do them again this summer, but I hope he does, because I love those things. Those are just a blast to watch. Perry has already, and the extraordinary statistician and historian that he is, has already done some work on what the Wheat Kings might get out of the Nate Danielson trade. And by his reckoning, if the player selected should become an overager, assuming, of course, that the Wheat Kings make the selection, the Wheat Kings could be getting the benefits of that Nate Danielson trade in 2032.
And that's without continuing with more trades. That's just if it was to stop there, it still pays off until that
point.
That's
that one player, that first-round pick, I believe, from 2027, he said, has the potential. If it turns into, you know, a five-year player, a guy who plays as a 20-year-old, you're looking at 2032 for the last branch of the Nate Danielson trade.
And it's that easy to, you know, imagine that that player comes in and at a 19-year-old potentially gets traded for who knows, even a draft pick or two, another player, and that tree continues. And you just never know, but for one guy.
So it's incredible.
Time will tell with that one. That one's going to be exciting, though.
I got some speculation on what the Wheat Kings might end up doing with that pick, but I don't think we can get into that before we start talking about what the team's going to be like.
Yeah, and that is going to be obviously a topic of discussion for the fans and for the team itself all summer long, as they look at at their prospect pool and at the guys and what they're going to be doing this summer. Let's go into now talking about the Nationals, because this is a tournament that, you know, we've been tracking, you know, at least who's going to be playing there internally a little bit for a while, because we had so many prospects involved across our provinces who could be vying for one of these spots. The TELUS Cup, it's in Nova Scotia this year. There are six teams who are going to be making it. There's a Pacific qualifier, which is BC and Alberta. There's a West, which is Saskatchewan and Manitoba. There's the Central, which is Ontario, which we're going to get into. I want to talk about briefly anyway.
Yeah.
Then you've got the Quebec, and you got East. Then you have your host, which is going to be the Sydney Rush. So all those teams who are now vying down, I know as of yesterday, I believe the Ontario League was still having their playdowns. Did they have a winner yesterday? I didn't update it today, but I assumed it had to be the weekend, because they're the last one.
I was looking through it today, and it looks like Markham has made their way to the event. So we've got our six.
So in all the other regional qualifiers, though, you had BC and Alberta, so you had basically two leagues. Again, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, you had two leagues. Ontario had seven. There are like seven different leagues who are vying for that one spot to go, just to get out, and I can't imagine with the population, but just to get out of Ontario to get to Nationals, probably more than any other division, has got to be the biggest accomplishment, but
the biggest grind.
The biggest grind, just with like that amount of just percentage odds you have to go through. It's almost like March Madness, where it's just there's so many teams that I don't know how you even get through that to have one.
Well, and you think about it just statistically from the number of teams involved, seven with Ontario. Okay, there's six at the TELUS Cup. These Ontario teams have all played in a physically larger tournament than the TELUS Cup.
Just to get out of Ontario.
To get into the TELUS Cup.
Quebec had three or four, I think, on that list. And then the East had, another two. But it was unbelievable how that worked. But it came down to being in the West Regional. Briefly mentioned it. It was the Brandon Wheat King U18 versus the Saskatoon Blazers. Your Wheat Kings had five prospects in that championship game. That tournament itself, it was a wild couple of days there in Winnipeg, including that gold medal game where it was a 0-0 tie going into overtime. Can you imagine that, Rob? It's Western Regionals. You're a team that has not lost all year except for that one overtime loss early in the season. And you're going into this without being able to score. And your goalie, Berg Hood, by all accounts, just absolutely standing on his head. And then magic happens, where all of a sudden, Brady Turco, just end-to-end OT winner.
Yeah, a game like that, you expect the first goal of a game to be one of two things. Either it is an absolute stinker, a puck thrown off a stanchion or off somebody's backside or something like that, that just sheer exhaustion overwhelms the goaltender. Or it's a skill player doing something so good that the goalie simply can't stop it. Earlier this year, the Wheat Kings were in a game like that against the Lethbridge Hurricanes. You had the two teams trading chances all through overtime and regulation until about halfway through overtime. It's Nate Danielson, the only guy on the ice who could have made this shot, just beating Menegan cleanly off the rush with this bar down bullet. He's the only guy who could do that. And in this game, for Brandon's AAA squad, you get Brady Turco scoring the kind of goal that, no, other than Jackson Jacobson, I would say only he could score in that game.
It was an incredible goal. If you can, try to search it out. It wasn't really widely produced on Twitter and Facebook, but I was able to find a video of it. But it was absolutely awesome for those guys. So they did squeak by the Saskatoon Blazers in an epic gold medal showdown to see them take that West spot. Now as they go into this TELUS Cup, that is happening coming up at the end of April.
Yes, that's going to be coming up starting on Monday of next week, so we'll definitely have eyes on that. It's going to be really interesting to see. And I'm always curious to see how teams from that, they call it the West region. I always mentally think of it as Central because Manitoba is Central Canada geographically. I'm always interested to see how teams from that region stack up against their counterparts because by reputation, Saskatchewan AAA and Manitoba AAA are pretty well thought of leagues. And Saskatchewan in particular, I know when I was there, was thought of as a very mature league. So when you stack up those leagues against other leagues, despite having smaller populations, the Prairie teams tend to do relatively well. But I'm always interested to see every time around. I mean, I think Quebec has a couple-year winning streak going at that event. I apologize to any of our French listeners, I am going to butcher this pronunciation. The Cantonnière de Magog, I believe they are. We'll see if they can uphold that streak. But I'm really curious to see how these teams shake out and how they represent their respective leagues because we don't always get a sense of how good some of those other AAA leagues are.
Even when it came down to the West Regionals, I mean, we were talking about thinking internally, seeing this U18 team play, but against their counterparts, they looked absolutely unstoppable at times. But again, those other teams could look unstoppable in their leagues as well. You don't know what the competition, you're right, you don't know what it looks like against them until they finally do get to play each other. If the Wheat Kings and the Blazers had to play themselves in a seven-game series, there's probably going to be a couple of wins there for sure going to Saskatoon. That would make it a lot more competitive. In the two games they played in the tournament, though, Brandon ended up winning both. But that 1-0-0 game, I mean, it was, but both games were very, very tight.
This was no cakewalk, and I'm glad it wasn't because it demonstrates that the guys who are lighting up the score sheet can continue to score when the games get tough. Jackson Jacobson is going to be a good player for the Brandon Wheat Kings. I venture he will not be a 3-point-a-game player at 16. There's going to be difficulties for him breaking into the Western Hockey League as there are for any young player. It's nice for him to get up against competition where he is up against adversity, and I think that's only going to be good for his Brady Turco, Easton Oditz, and Ethan Stewart's development.
We've talked about it even on guys on the pod here. I mean, one of the guys I think back of, did we just lose our camera feed? If the camera died, that's fine.
I've never looked better.
We're still rolling. So, guys like I think about like Jackson D'Souza when he was on the pod, talking about at a younger age when you were having to be a defenseman, you could do different things that you just can't do at certain ages. So eventually you have to get and learn your game and then find what works at that level. He's a little different where it's a goal scorer and Turco and Oda and all those guys. But you're right. There is going to be a further pushback about, how they're going to do this, what their game is really going to be. But at every level so far, they've been up against older competition. Here's Jackson. He was just named the CEHL U18, we haven't mentioned this, just named yesterday, the CEHL U18 Player of the Year. He's 15 years old, turned 15 in December. We're talking about a kid that's 14 turning 15. He put up over a point a game, over a goal per game. His assists was over 2 per game for, 100 and...
So his cumulative statistics over the full year were like 136 points in 40-some games. But if you look at the regular season, it was 106 points in 34 games, I believe.
And 35 goals. Being,
yeah, yes. He was... Listen, I tried to find the last time somebody scored like this in Manitoba AAA. There were a couple players who had slightly, and I do mean very slightly, more points than him. Dustin Boyd had 107, but Boyd played 40 games. The last time somebody had more than 3 points a game in AAA over the course of a full season like that was Pat Falloon. We're going back such an absurdly long length of time to find the last time somebody scored at his pace. So when he was named Canadian Elite Hockey League Player of the Year, on the one hand, tremendous accomplishment. On the other hand, you kind of find yourself thinking, Was there ever any doubt? Was there somebody elsewhere in Canada that was even in the same stratosphere as this kid? Not at that level.
Again, when you talk about the about what they've done versus their opponents, it is hard to gauge, I suppose, at some different levels. But when you just look at a stat standpoint and the age standpoint and the league,
He's in a class of his own. I mean,
it's just the year was what it was. He dominated the league. So best of luck in Nationals. I'm really excited to see what this team could do. Not since 2004 has a Brandon team won the national championships. 20 years, it could be the anniversary of another one, potentially.
20 years on the nose, that seems like a good time.
That would seem fantastic. Almost like it's happened in Brandon hockey before. 96, 06, 2016.
Something
come on,
along
Wee King
those
fans.
Lines.
Come on, Wee King fans.
Something comes to mind.
Something happened in 96 for Wee King fans in 2016. Yeah. Anyways, 20 years seem to be a good number for Brandon. For the Wee King's sake, I hope, though, for the WHL Wee Kings, I hope we can do that quicker than 20 years.
I don't want to wait till 2036 for them to win another one, although I don't think we'll have to, the way they're building up.
Let's sure hope so. So now next for us here, besides the draft, which when we are going to get some life around here again, I know a lot of our summer, Rob, it is just that. It's about time. We're almost finished after this pod and another couple of days for us to wrap up all of our digital archiving. And then literally we put a stamp on 23-24, and then we're going to be looking ahead to 24-25. What do you got going on this summer?
Well, I do like to golf a little bit. I'll be active one way or another. I'd love to find some summer hockey here in Brandon. I've been missing that the last couple of years in Saskatchewan, where it's not as prevalent. But
there's definitely that here.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking for it, because I will say, if you come out of the rink in shorts at about like 9 o'clock on a summer night where it's just starting to cool off, that is one of life's great pleasures.
All right, so the Wendy Summer Hockey League has an illustrious history here. You know what's actually crazy is going to watch some of these games, and they do have different divisions, not to put too much pressure on you.
They'll need to be because I'm not making the top one.
I know what division you'd be playing in. But there is so much skill in terms of professional hockey from our area. When the guys come back for the summer, that's some of their training, is they play in that. You'll see a lot of current and former NHLers and professional hockey guys who are playing in the Wendy Summer Hockey League here. So
probably not against me if divisions are a thing.
No,
I'm going to respectfully suggest that based on my Thursday skates, I ought not to be on the ice at the same time as some of these guys. I got put on defense the last Thursday skate. Now, I haven't played defense since I was 15, my minor midget year. And who do I look up and see bearing down on me on a two-on-two rush? Aaron Rome and Billy.
You got Mark Derlego and Aaron Rome coming in on you?
I didn't stop that rush.
No. I really wouldn't think that you'd even be on there for that one.
There got to a point, and it didn't take very long, where I was looking over at the other bench to see who was coming on, and then I would go, okay, right, certain guys are coming on, I'm going off.
You know what, though? At least you already mentioned on the pod that you're doing training, so you're a lot further along than a lot of other guys.
At
least you're physically fit.
I'm physically fit. I can push a lot of weight, but as sometimes I'm fond of saying, when people observe my hockey talent versus my fitness level, imagine how bad I'd be if I wasn't working out. I'd be in real trouble. I will do a lot of working out over the summer. That doesn't stop, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if I can crack that 300-pound mark on the bench press. That'll be fun.
I'll see if I can crack the 300-pound mark on the scale.
please don't.
So as we turn the calendar page and we think about our summer plans, Rob, the next big thing is looking at next season, and forget off the ice and everything we got to do here to get ready for it, but on the ice, it is going to be an exciting time. We don't know for sure. We talked about there's going to be a lot of movement in here, but some things we do know to be excited about for next season in terms of our roster. We've touched on Roger McQueen. He's not the only returning guy who we're expecting big things from. Next up is a guy who's going to be coming off of the NHL draft here this year. He is one of the top-rated prospects in it, and that's Charlie Ehlich.
Yes, and that is another item we have on the calendar for this summer, is the NHL draft, because it looks like the Wheat Kings are going to restart a streak. They had one kind of come to an end a little bit, but they had some players drafted last season, and I think it's safe to say you will hear Charlie Ehlich's name called on one day of the draft. Which day depends on who you talk to. I've definitely seen lists, quite a few as a matter of fact, that have him in sort of that back half of the first round. I've seen other lists where he's a pretty firm second rounder. And then when you get into that portion of the rankings, things become almost impossible to read. Like, I remember last year going in, Riley Height was ranked kind of in that mid-20s range on a lot of lists. He ended up going to 60-something, and goodness, doesn't that look like a steal right about now? Whereas other guys who were ranked in, you know, the 40s and 50s were clawing their way up to the very end of the first round. So at that point, the draft gets fluid. What we're fairly certain about is Charlie Ehlick is going to hear his name called, and I'm really excited to see when he comes to an NHL camp and starts getting that advice from NHL trainers and coaches and from those NHL nutritionists, and they come back, these guys do, with all this new information in their heads that allows them to take steps forward in this league. I can't wait to see what Charlie Ehlick does with that information, because he has such an incredible skill set to build upon and turn into that top flight D-man.
On the back end, a couple of guys who are looking for some big summers, looking to return and to really make an impact, including Quinn Manti, who made a big jump, and not just on the ice, but off the ice. Just him as a person and his character and his charisma has really come through in the last year.
And that came, and we talked about it there again, from NHL camps. He gets one with the Calgary Flames and comes back, and he's a very different player. And I think there's a good chance that the Flames would extend him an invitation again. I think they would be satisfied with his progression. And I want to see what he's able to do at 19, because at this point, the decor really is starting to fall more and more on his shoulders. But he's at an age now where you expect that. And he's gotten used to that responsibility for a couple of years now. So I really want to see him at 19 and see what he does with it.
I mean, you're talking about there about a two-time Brad McCrimmon trophy winner for the best D of the year. Obviously, you know, he's going to be a big part of the blue line, the staple of it next season. Also on the blue line, Luke Shipley. Now, Luke is one of those 19-year-old turning 20, so he could be taking up a 20-year-old spot. In my mind, he's one of the ones I would pencil in some pretty thick pencil, to be one of your 20s at the start of the season. The way that he has played and performed and just his character in general, even though he hasn't worn a letter, he has been a leader.
Led all Wheat King D-men in goals, by the way, with 9. And the fact is, sneaky tough. He's a guy who is willing. Now, I didn't have him fighting Jagger Fergus on the fight guard, I'll say that much. But he's someone who will stick up for himself and his teammates. He'll play a physical game. He's pretty well-rounded. He's a guy that would be a very effective 20-year-old, I would think. And he'll be given some opportunities. Again, on the power play, I think that's a guy that has a 20-year-old season in the dub in him. And he has high expectations for himself. That's what I like about Luke Shipley. When you talk to him off the ice, he said he wanted to be close to a point per game as a D-man this year. And he was disappointed that he didn't get that. So you know he's going to put in that work to try and get to that level next season.
Looking at some of the exciting forwards to be returning, you have got the reigning rookie of the year, who is also the most scholastic player, a very intelligent, a very personable man in Carter Klippenstein. Klipp had a fantastic season. It was a little spurty at times, but when he was on, he was finding the back of the net, and he's got a killer shot.
That shot is something that stands out about him, but I bet you if you ask other teams about him, the shot isn't what they'll talk about. They'll talk about how he is no fun to play against. He's
tough.
He's
hard-nosed. Physical.
He's tough. He's in your face. He's almost a bit of a rat. And at 6'3" or 6'2", depending on who you believe, I'm inclined to lean towards 6'3". Like, he seems, I'm 6 foot myself. He seems a good bit taller than I am. And he's another guy who could, you know, put on some muscle over the offseason and play that power forward game. The other thing that's going for him, as a late birthday, like Roger McQueen, next year is his draft year. So he's got that added bit of motivation. That's a guy that I would expect to have a big summer for the Wheat Kings.
Caleb Hadland, coming off of last year where he had the injury at Team Canada early, he missed most of the season before returning, just kind of was finding his feet at the end of the year. He came in this year, and Robin, we were talking about that whole Iron Man thing. This might come up on the last pod, but how he played in every single game, including even the preseason, but the way that he's performed and how many times this year up in the booth, we looked down and I said something to the guys along the phrase of, look at Hads. Like, he was involved in everything. He was just, if it was PK, if it was power play, he was in the corners, he was fighting, he was blocking shots, he was getting points. He really kind of did it all this year.
He's your block that shot, throw that hit, leader in all areas of the game, and productive offensively, too. He flirted with that 40-point mark a little bit, and I would expect 50-plus from him next year point-wise, because there's more ice time to go around, and he is going to have, you know, he's going to have a big summer, because that's a guy, one thing Marty Murray always says about him is, you don't have to worry about him working hard. You don't have to persuade this kid to work hard. You don't have to push this kid to work hard. He's self-driven. So I would expect him to come to camp looking to take another step yet, and fully capable of doing so. He would be one of the guys I'm most excited for next season, honestly, because there is an offensive element to his game that hasn't been fully tapped yet, even though he had about 40 points.
one of the guys I'm most excited about for next year, and just talking about untapped potential, but maybe just because we haven't been able to see him play here a whole lot, and that's Nicholas Johnson. Nick Johnson, when he came over in that trade from Portland for Nate Danielson with Rhett Ravindahl, he was hurt, and then he came back, and then he got hurt again. But when he came back and finished the season, I really liked what I saw from him. And I'm really excited to see him, much like Hads was the year before, come back and then see him healthy. Because we only got a small glimpse, a very small glimpse of, I believe, what he can do in this league.
I've been throwing around the term power forward, and the definition of that term has changed for sure from when I was a kid. He's probably the closest thing to an old school power forward the Wheat Kings have. He's a physical player for sure, and he'll stand up on guys, and it was the game against Prince Albert that I really noticed it, because he and Goldsmith were going shoulder on shoulder quite a few times, and he was standing Goldsmith up. And listen, I've seen Terrell Goldsmith for years now. I know how hard he can hit. There's not many guys who can stand up to him. For Nick Johnson to be able to do that, that says to me that that's a guy who's going to be excellent at protecting the puck, no fun to play against down low. And then a couple games later against Regina, there was an incident where I think it was Drew Mushomanski tried to hit him, and Johnny saw him coming and just cartwheeled him. It was a perfect reverse hit and a perfect encapsulation, because later on, of course, that game he scored, of what he can bring to the Wheat Kings at his best. I don't know what his situation is going to be as far as lines are concerned, because he was playing with Jaden Weens and Brett Hyland at the end there, so his is the only line that's been really decimated up front. I don't know who he's going to find chemistry with, but I'm curious to see who it ends up being.
There's going to be a whole lot of juggling, of course, with that. I mean, as there's going to be with everything on the team as they look to fill those spots. Dominic Peter, that's a guy that this year, when he had a really hot start, I thought we were in for a bit of a miraculous climb. Then he started to struggle a little bit, had to kind of find his way a little bit in the league. And then near the end of the year again, he really started to kind of climb up. And talk about a guy who was, had to get a claim to the country, to the culture, being away, having his dad come over and visit. I thought that was pretty huge for him during the year. He performed really well for that weekend as well. But that was kind of a turning point as he got comfortable. So now to see him come back next year and be comfortable and know his surroundings, I'm expecting a much bigger year from Dominic Peter.
He got comfortable with the puck in different ways as the year went on. He was guilty at times, I think, of deferring to his teammates over passing. And he's told me that, he thinks of himself as a playmaker, which is perfectly fine. He's an excellent playmaker. But that shot of his is such an underrated weapon. And we've seen that a few times this season where he's beaten a goaltender cleanly with it off the rush. Or earlier on in the year when he was the one-time option on the power play. And with Brett Hyland moving on as a 20-year-old, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Dominic Peter is the guy perched at the top of that right circle on the man advantage, loading up that big one-timer, because from there he is a threat to both hammer the puck or, with Roger McQueen often being parked in front, be that shot-pass kind of guy. He's going to be a very dangerous power play weapon. He's whip-smart. He's really effective with the puck. And another guy who, because he's relatively slim but pretty tall, could put on enough weight to play a bit of a stronger puck protection game. Another guy I thought actually had a pretty good series against Moose Jaw.
One of the last guys I want to really focus on here, let's talk about, is Ryland Roorsma. Roors is a guy who was wearing, one of the leaders on and off the ice now for the Wheat Kings for the last couple of seasons. He's now the last piece of that first round draft class where it was Nate Danielson, Tyson Zimmer, and Ryland Roorsma. I feel like now for him, this is coming into like what he's going to feel as really like his true veteran year. Like this is going to be not like he's expecting to see, but this is going to be kind of like in a way Ryland's team.
He is a career Wheat King. He's going to get his 250th game this season if all things point the right direction, and they'll all have been with Brandon. He's one of the faster players on the team. When he lets it go, he's got one of the better shots on the team. He broke that 19-goal barrier. He finally did it.
He did it.
20 goals.
20-goal score, Ryland Roorsma.
It wouldn't shock me in the least if he broke 30 this season. He's got the speed. He's got the hands. And he's a hard-nosed guy when he's on his best. So I think this is a player that the Wheat Kings are going to lean on for leadership next season. At the very least, he's a guy you know what you're getting with him. There's no mystery there as far as, oh, geez, is he going to be able to do this? He's a fast player. He always has been. He's a good shooter. He always has been. And he started to find some chemistry towards the end of the year. We talked about forward lines being intact. Him, Dominic Peter, and Mateo Michaels, who we haven't really mentioned too much yet, That's an intriguing line. And one of the reasons I wanted to mention Michaels, because it brings me back to something about Nick Johnson that I just realized I had maybe sold him a little short on. Michaels is right-handed. Joby Baumuller is right-handed. Brady Turco coming up is right-handed. Most of the Wheat Kings forwards were not. Roger McQueen is right-handed, but he's a centerman. So Nick Johnson, in his entire time with the Wheat Kings, was playing on his off wing. With Brady Turco coming in as a right shooting forward, there might be an opportunity for Nick Johnson to move back to his natural wing position if that's what he wants to do. So that'll be interesting to see.
You know what? When you break it down like that, I literally did not even think about that for the first time. But
It says quite something that you saw him play right wing and never thought to yourself he's out of place there.
Yeah,
like,
that's
he looks good.
That's right.
But moving back to his natural position might be even better.
Yeah. Wow. Lastly, before we kind of get out of here, let's talk about the guys between the pipes. Haven't talked about the goaltenders yet, because there's not probably going to be a whole lot of change you're expecting. If all things, you know, unless something crazy happens next year, you're going to have the same goaltending tandem as this year, and that's Carson Bjarnason between the pipes and then Ethan Eskett backing up. Both those guys, you know, in their own rights had great years. I know Barney Wishey had a better playoff run, but all in all, it was a great, great season, and, you know, a lot of good numbers by both of those guys put up throughout the season.
And Ethan Eskett in the playoffs, by contrast, had a tremendous postseason. He had a .976 save percentage. Like, he was excellent for the Wheat Kings when they called on him. So that bodes well for him for next year. And it is going to have to bode well for him for next year because, as was the case this season, we can pretty well rely on the fact that Carson Bjarnason is going to start the year with the Philadelphia Flyers, at least for a little bit of it. And it wouldn't shock me at all if at some time around Christmas, the Wheat Kings had to do without Barney as well.
I would go on a limb to venture that as well. You would really think, you don't want to put too much pressure, and a lot can change between now and then. But realistically, when you're looking at that World Junior roster for Team Canada next December, there's not a whole lot of other goaltending, there's only a couple, but there's like two or three that are NHL prospect goalies with the birth year that could be going there. So it very well could be Barney's time.
And he's fought hard to earn it. I know he wanted to get there a little earlier than usual this year. 18-year-old goalies don't often go. Scott Ratzlaff was kind of an exception this season. But for Carson, I think he is your number one goalie. He's done everything in his power to earn that. You have no reason to lose faith in him now. And I think what strikes me, I remember watching Reed Dick with the Swift Current Broncos the last couple years. His 17- and 18-year-old years, he was okay, I would say. Never blew my mind, wasn't somebody who stood out massively. But this year's his 19-year-old year, and look at the numbers he's been putting up. Carson Bjarnason at 19, the same kind of projectable frame that Reed Dick has, the same kind of pedigree. That could be a linchpin. And it could be the Wheat Kings' ace in the hole, because there are some teams, not many, but some, that have enough firepower to keep up with what the Wheat Kings are planning on putting on the ice next year. I don't think any of those teams have a goaltender like Carson Bjarnason.
He's big, he's agile, and he's only going to get better. So now with him coming up this summer, I know he's going to be around here. We're talking about that. He's got a lot of training to do. But you're right. Then he goes to Philly and goes to camp. And then, you know, chances are 19-year-old goalies in the NHL aren't going to be sticking around, right, with their situation. So you're going to be expecting him to get back. But in that time, Ethan Eskett has shown that he can definitely take the reins and go. So.
Got his first WHL shutout under his belt this year against Lethbridge. Poor Lethbridge. We don't have anything against Lethbridge. I want to be clear, by the way. There's nothing wrong. I enjoyed Lethbridge as a road city.
Except for Forbesy.
Well, we had to bring up Forbesy. I was going to try not to mention him. I actually love Forbesy. He's one of the nicest guys in the game.
Of course.
He's one of the nicest guys in the game. We love Forbesy. But it looked like the Wheat Kings had something against the Hurricanes this year, some kind of personal vendetta they were taking out on them, because three shutouts all year, they were all against Lethbridge.
Well, I'll take it.
I mean, hey, it's better than no shutouts on the year.
that's fine with me. It's got to happen against some team.
Sometimes there's just no accounting for teams having each other's number, and the Wheat Kings pretty unquestionably had the Hurricanes' number.
So, Rob, that's pretty much it for the pod here for, I guess, this week. We haven't made a whole lot of plans for what we're going to be doing with this, but there's not a whole lot else to do. So as soon as we have some, you know, Wheat King info or something to talk about, I think we could just plan and just pop on and do it again.
I will say I would love to hop on and do this as many times as you want to do it. I always love chatting hockey with you. I think round about May 9th. We owe Chris Moulton an appearance on this.
I that would make the most sense. I mean, for us to do it before then, we definitely could. But realistically, once the hockey guys get back around, we get closer. So what Rob just mentioned was the 9th. That's the day of the WHL Bantam draft. So after we do, of course, that draft, the whole history or the whole future of the franchise can change. So it could be a very historically significant day. Of course, we'll have, you know, we'll talk to those guys, keep track of our social media for all that. That day, Rob, you weren't here yet for the draft last year. It is a zoo around here. It's so much fun. The boardroom is buzzing as the guys make the picks and whatnot. We're going back and forth. We get about, I'm not even kidding here, sometimes a 10 to 15 second heads up about who we're picking before they have to submit it. And the way the league works is after round one, you just push click on the thing and it submits it. And then that gets pulled to the WHL live site. So when people are on there and they're seeing the names pop up, we're sometimes finding that out literally 10 to 15 seconds before the guys push it. And then we have to try to make all the graphics and the videos and the social media and welcome these kids properly. So it is a whirlwind day. So, you know, stick with us on that one. But coming up on May 9th for any hockey fan, it's always fun for draft day because you can think about the future. And one of my favorite things is the Twitter account that goes through every year and picks up all of the dub names. All the first names of the kids. That's one of my favorite things too.
How many Jadens this year do you think? Sorry.
Is that name passing?
How many Jacksons spelled specifically with an X?
Oh, there's going to be at least 4 of them, I think.
Jackson. Now, I'm starting to see Jackson and the Regina Jackson Vaughn has it J-A-X-S-I-N. That's a unique spelling of that name that I've never seen anywhere else.
There's been so many ones that I've seen the last little bit, but it's going to be fun. You know, whichever new Jackson we're going to draft, you can find out coming up and how it gets spelled coming up on May 9th. So we'll definitely do a pod, I guess, then, but maybe one before. I don't know. We're going to see how the rest of this wrap-up goes.
Could be Jackson with a soft J. I think it's yogging.
Oh, boy. Okay, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Arvis podcast. He's Rob. I'm Falco. We'll talk to you again soon. Cheers.